you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
Oh, what is up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. Of course, I am Dave Smith, the libertarian Tupac, most consistent motherfucker you know. And of course, he is COVID Jesus, the king of the calks, Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? How you feeling as a second-class citizen here in downtown New York City?
You know, it's not too bad. I get most of my sandwiches from delis that don't give a shit, so I'm getting by.
You know, I mean, to be completely honest, as fucked up as the law is, you are always a second-class citizen in a sense.
I guess
you know
so,
what I
yeah.
mean? You're right at home where you belong. It's just, it's both of us.
Not it's
just
not
you,
like
the
I
two
had
of us.
All these fancy dates lined up and now I can't go to the restaurants with them and it's all over.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Do you feel, I'm curious, I wasn't even planning on asking this question.
But can I also just say I really enjoyed telling all the comedy clubs in New York City that wanted to book me that I can't go there anymore. Because their COVID policies, so that felt nice telling them I didn't need their spots.
That is a nice position to be in for sure. Do you feel there's been a bit of a debate raging on social media and on some big podcasts and stuff like this about exactly what moral obligation one has to resist these type of restrictions? And I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other in all situations. In some situations, I really do. And I do think there are some nuance of different people's situations where I understand where they got to just kind of cave. Other people, I think, are in better situations, and I think they have more of an obligation to kind of resist and do what they can. But what do you think about, like, the ethical position of like working one of these fucking clubs that is discriminating against their audiences? You know what I mean? Like, do you feel kind of like, oh, we shouldn't do that? Cause I do. I mean, I was fucking, you know, I had a real issue when this first came out with doing like the Legion of Skanks at the Stand. And then basically the compromise Lewis came up with was that, well, we're going to do it outside at the Stand as long as weather's permitting. And then we're going to fucking figure it out from there. But we're basically not going to do a show where the audience is discriminated against. I'm not going to do a show where somebody who doesn't want to get the fucking vaccine now can't come to my show. Like, I'm not going to do that. But I don't know. I was just curious if you had a feeling on that one way or the other.
So that's a big question. I feel I'm not playing the game with the fake COVID cards.
Yeah.
Because my personal feeling is that if a business doesn't want me in there, I'm okay. I don't need to be in here. I also don't believe that people are just going to get away with that forever. And when I was in high school, I had a fake ID forever. I loved having my fake ID. I was 17, 16, drinking in New York City bars. It was a good time. I also feel, I know that this is going to sound crazy. If you're really concerned about COVID and you want to go to a business where you feel like everyone is vaccinated, I think you're really fucking stupid. Especially, I got the safest blood on the planet, but I kind of respect you're a business owner that wants to be compliant with the law, and other people don't want people like me in there. And like, so I kind of, my feeling is, like, I'm respectful of people. If people really feel like that's the way they want to run their business, I don't need to be in your business. And I'm hoping that other people like me, there's going to be enough people that there's a market to cater to, that, you know, this just doesn't work forever. But that's kind of my version of non-compliance right now, is just like, I if your restaurant's going to enforce this, your bodega's going to enforce this, I'll spend my money elsewhere. That,
yeah.
In terms of what you were saying with clubs, no. If a club's, I mean, I guess if I'm playing, here's the difference. If a club will have me in violation of the rule to perform to their audience, like a Times Square type operation, I'd probably still just do it for the stage time. But if it's my, if it was like our thing, then of course not. That's ridiculous.
Well, so I, you know, one of the things I was thinking about this, right, is that, so the like the Soho Forum, which is coming up, which is Scott Horton debating Bill Kristol. And I, now my wife is about to have a baby any day now. I may not be able to attend this for that reason. So that, you know, if my wife goes into labor, I can't go no matter what any COVID policy was, or if it's right after having the baby, I'm not going to be able to go. But the venue is enforcing the vaccine.
Are they going with the you can get tested thing?
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think so. I think that was the thing until the vaccine passports came into effect, right? Now, I am conflicted about this because if I was ever going to make an exception, this is the thing I would make an exception to be there for that. And you can say everything you want to about how horrible the fucking vaccine passport is. Believe me, I don't know if you can find anybody who's been as opposed to them from the very jump as I have and as passionately as I have been. But man, Scott Horton getting to debate the most prominent neocon in the world is something that, first off, Scott Horton deserves so much. Like, he just, dude, I don't think people understand that. Like, Scott is a brilliant fucking guy who has worked for antiwar.com for whatever it is now, like 20 years, for peanuts. I mean, he's literally, like, Scott just started now. Scott's doing all right, I think, over the last few years. Like, since the books came out, I think he started getting, like, the recognition he deserves and shit and starting to do, like, all right. Still not what he should be. But like, he sacrificed so much just being the dude. He just deserves this moment so much. And then just, like, the world deserves this moment so much for him to just go get to really stand up against Bill Kristol, you know? Son of the co-creator of modern neoconservatism, and again, quite debatably, but possibly the most prominent neoconservative in the world. That's just such a huge thing to be like, oh, I'm not going to go to that. You know what I mean? Like, I almost feel like, can I make an exception just for this one thing? And then I won't fucking work any other clubs. I won't do any other shows at these spots. I'll fucking work around it. But anyway, it's just something I've been fucking battling with a little bit, so curious how you felt about it, how others feel about it.
That was a tough one because I don't know. I got tickets for Sturgill Simpson next week, and I've been weighing that same thing. Am I going to use that fixed car? I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah.
And if I had a job right now that told me I would walk out of that job. I'm not telling anyone to leave their job. I'm not making a decision for you.
But you have to. But at the same time, it's a thing where, like, man, you know, again, right, it's like, I'm not telling anyone to do that. But if no one does that, then we're fucked.
Yeah, I would personally
do it. So you kind of need some people to do this. Like, and so that's the tough position. It's the fucking state puts you in a tough fucking spot,
man. I'm in a unique position, unlike other people, that I've chosen not to have a lot of expenses, kids, wives, girlfriends, or any of the thing that gets you stuck in positions where you don't have the freedom to go, you know what, I'm valuable enough that I'll be okay without this.
Yeah.
A lot of people are a lot more stuck in their lifestyles, which I've consciously, you know, made zero commitments and taken no responsibility on my plate, so I could say fuck you to anyone at any time. That's the freedom I get to live with, that I understand. But no, listen, Gene, I feel like I got a lot of respect for Gene, so I'm sure
I love him.
I'm sure he's got a good plan there, and if you can get the test thing, then
that's a whole different ballgame. If that's the case, I think that I mean, these, you know, Gene Epstein and Scott Horton are two people who I admire to the maximum degree that you can admire, you know, another person. Like, I just have so much respect for both of them, and I wanna support both of them and what they're doing, but I am conflicted about
the level of the problem. And I put myself in the category of wrong here, so I'm not pointing any fingers. I was wrong on this as well. We've got a divide and conquer problem where, like, when they first started shutting people down. And they started shutting people down, the stores, restaurants. There were a lot of people that couldn't go to work. I got a job where I stay at home, and I'm digital. And I'm like, oh, good, I'm lucky. I didn't do anything for those other people. I mean, sure, I literally nothing. I didn't show any support. Maybe the local restaurant ate a little more. But, we all got... That's how they win, is by divide and conquer. And for all of us just going like, oh, shit, I'm lucky that they got that guy. You know what? Yeah. It's like a school ground thing. The bully got that guy. So, okay, good. I'm in the clear because he took down that guy. And I'm guilty because that's what happened at the beginning of Corona. I didn't do anything for anybody. I was like, I'm lucky. I got my job. If everyone continues to do that, and I'm a person that's done that, that's how we lose, because you keep divide, conquer, and then who's left?
Yeah.
And so the COVID, Pat, that's what's next from having shut down the businesses.
Well, it is. It's a funny thing because it is, you know, there's been comparisons. And I guess I've made these comparisons myself too, from the COVID passport to the social credit system. And you start to realize after a while, and I feel this way a lot about, like, you know, like the same way you'd be kind of like, well, statism is kind of like a religion, or like social justice warriorism, wokeism is kind of like a religion. But the more you go through that, you're like, oh no, it's not kind of like, it just is one. It is. That's what it is, which with everything, with its rituals and mythologies and ever, it's the same thing. This is what you're doing. You're literally performing, like, you know, like ritualistic dances, basically. And you realize it right now. It's like, oh, it's the COVID passports aren't like a social credit system. They're not the gateway to a social credit system. It is a social credit system. That's what it is. It's that you basically comply, you know, with the government edicts. You dance when they say dance, and then you get access to stuff. That's it. That's what this situation is. And when that happens, you're like, fuck. Well, the right thing to do there seems like not complying. Anyway. It's a real thing, man. And I'll say, by the way, that if there's one thing I'm guilty of, and I've gotten some criticism from people online about this, and I think they're probably right that we should have been talking about Australia more on the show. And I guess, you know, as I've definitely mentioned it several times, but I guess I don't know what to say other than the obvious thing to say, which is that the country has become a brutal totalitarian police state, literally with martial law in some of their biggest cities, just horrific stuff. And to me, the real takeaway from it is that it's not as if this is like some war-torn third world country. This is fucking Australia. Like, just, a year ago was a relative, I guess more than a year now, but 2 years ago was a relatively free country. You know, okay, not bad gun laws and bad, you know, some bad economic policies, but relatively, on the broad scope of human history, a relatively free country.
With some of the sluttiest hot chicks in the world.
At least when they come over here, Rob.
I mean, when they export those women here.
but I mean, you look at what they've become now, and I'll tell you, you see some of these fucking videos of the people resisting now, and you're like, God damn. Like, this is like the thing, right? And being a Jew whose family, you know, went through the Holocaust, and really only one member of them of it came out of the Holocaust. The lesson, the eternal lesson of the Holocaust was always, don't wait till you're on the fucking boxcar. You know what I mean? The problem, the big mistake that the Jews made, which everybody basically concedes at this point, including the Jews themselves, is they fucked up by going, well, it's not going to get to that level. He's not just going to fucking kill all of us. So just like, all right, go along. He's going to fucking deport all of us, I guess. We'll figure it out. We'll get in somewhere else. And they just kind of went step by step by step by step. And the point that I'm making, the connection to all of this from, you know, like New York City being here, Australia being here, Nazi Germany being, you know, out there, is that you're like, even when you see them resisting in Australia like that, man, you'd much rather resist now than wait till you're at that point and have to start fucking, like, what are your options there? I mean, look at Australia as a fucking country where they're basically largely disarmed and under martial law. So what the fuck can you do then? Except what you see in these video clips. There's like no other option except rush, get fucking 10,000 of you together and rush into the fucking, into the fucking police. So I'm just saying, like, it's, if we're going to put up some type of fucking resistance, now is a much better time than 6 months from now. So that's something that's been weighing on me that I've been thinking about a lot. And I agree with what you're saying, Rob. Like, there's a truth to your point about, like, not having kids. And it does. There's no question that changes everything. But
I wasn't actually saying that as a winning life strategy for people.
No, I'm not. No. But just to your point that it's a different situation. There's a certain freedom of not having kids where you can roll the dice a little bit more, or you can tighten your belt a little bit more. You can do some of these things. But the flip side to that is that when you do have kids, preventing a really, really horrible outcome becomes much more important, you know? And so even though it is riskier in the short term to fight something, it becomes more necessary in some ways to not let it go to a really bad place in the future, because you just, you know, you really care about it. You know, you're not just kind of like, well, whatever happens after me happens. It's like, no, actually, what happens after me is the most important thing. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Sheath Underwear. Sheath makes the most comfortable boxer briefs I've ever worn. If you're sick of boxers that are too loose or briefs that are too tight, Sheath is for you. I am wearing a pair of Sheath Underwear right now as I speak. I am wearing a pair of Sheath Underwear every time you hear from me. It's the only underwear I own. It's the best. You have to get one pair. Get one pair and it's gonna change your life. The most comfortable boxer briefs you will ever put on your body. Their stretchy fabric is made out of a moisture-wicking technology. They're super soft, keep everything cool and comfortable and right in place. Sheath is particularly useful for staying cool during the summer and while working out. The most unique thing about Sheath underwear is they have these dual pouches that keep your man parts separated, which prevents things from sticking together, keeps them right where they're supposed to be. I was a little skeptical about the dual pouches, but let me tell you, it's a game changer. And by the way, if you're not into that idea, you don't have to use them. You can just wear them like a regular pair of underwear. They'll be the most comfortable pair of boxer briefs you've ever worn in your life. Plus, they have brand new materials like bamboo and mesh for even more cooling comfort. Go to sheathunderwear.com and get the most comfortable underwear you'll ever own. If you use the promo code PROBLEM20, you'll also get 20% off your order. That's sheathunderwear.com, promo code PROBLEM20 for 20% off your order. All right, let's get back into the show. Anyway,
the one thing I'm hoping for, just to put a little hope out there as we paint a true but grim picture, we talked about Russia collusion for 2 years, and yeah, we knew it was a bullshit story, and week after week we said it's bullshit, it's bullshit, it's bullshit, and at some point it ran out of time. They couldn't keep it up any longer. Whatever they needed to accomplish, they actually had gotten done, it went away. I'm hoping either, hey, listen, maybe the COVID data comes out at some point and it's so good that the market turns around and we all go, you know what? These vaccines are actually amazing, and they don't have to force it down our throats and the compliance thing goes away. Or we start to realize the story comes out that this has been a losing strategy, and so they restore freedoms because government really looks bad for everything that they've imposed upon us. Does that happen? I don't think that it just goes this way forever. I don't think they can ignore data forever. I don't think this is a... I think, if anything, Australia might have been the experiment, and hey, can we really just go full, like, it's a good island to run the test experiment of, can we turn full a third, and I don't think it would work here for them.
I agree. I think I think if it would work here for them, or if there was even a reasonable chance it would work here for them, I think they'd have done that. And they're not, because I think they know. Look, even Biden just doing the thing that he just did with this companies with 100 or more employees having to get tested or vaxxed. It was a bold move. And I think there's a lot of people being like, ah, shit. I don't know if this whole society will swallow that. And we certainly know pockets of it will not.
You know what else I think they're confronting is that there's a lot of people that bought into the bigger picture of this, but they're confronting little things that make no sense to them. So, example, I know parents that are both vaccinated and shopped around for schools where their 3-year-olds and 1-year-olds wouldn't have to wear a mask, and now there's a government mandate. Like, they found the school.
Yeah.
They went through the process of finding the school, and now their kid has to wear a mask. They're furious. Like, so most people, I feel, that were even willing to be compliant and play along through this entire thing, I think a large percentage of them have now confronted something. How many people got the vaccines and now they're furious that they might have to get a booster and they're not getting clear guidance on whether or not they need to get a booster? That's got to expose a little bit of the lie to you. So I don't think that, just my estimation, and maybe I'm being too optimistic and just dead wrong, I don't think that they can go on forever with this, and I don't think that they can push more authoritarian, because I just think the longer it goes on, the more of the lies that get exposed, the more it confronts people's personal realities, that people are just like, this isn't adding up.
Well, I think there is something to that, right? And I think that if you use, like, there are these a few big examples that I've lived through. Like, the big lies and major things that have been pushed based around those lies. And the ones that jump out to me right away are the war in Iraq, the banker bailout, Trump, Russia. You know, Trump is a Russian asset, all that shit, and now the COVID stuff. Those are the ones that just jump out at me right away, like these really big things that were all so clearly fucking lies, just pushed based off complete lies. Like, Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, was not in cahoots with al-Qaeda. The bankers did not need to be bailed out to save the economy. Donald Trump was not a fucking Russian spy. And lockdowns, mask mandates, fucking vax passports are all complete bullshit, right? Like, all of these things. And so the vax passports, of course, are the newest ones. All the other ones, they got them through. It's not that they couldn't get these things through, but everyone knows now that they were all bullshit. Or maybe not everyone, but at least a huge percentage of the population, the thinking percentage of the population, all know that these were all bullshit. So to your point, how long can they go with this before people just fucking know? And even the lockdown shit, I think, is starting to be like, you really don't see too many people advocating that we should be locking down again. You do still see people saying, oh my God, they're going unmasked at the Emmys, or oh my God, they're doing this, or there were unvaccinated people here. But do you see a lot of people, like a lot of liberals even, saying, oh man, we really should lock down again? And the fact that they're not saying that almost kind of indicates that, yeah, they can't even really sell that idea again. That's fucking stupid as shit to fucking lock down, and evil, of course.
The only problem with your series of examples, and you're 100% accurate, is that if you look back, even though the lie fell apart, they always kind of got what they wanted. So the Iraq lie worked long enough that they were able to go to war.
Yep.
The banker bailout, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the question becomes, with this COVID thing, what is it that they wanted? Was it just get rid of Trump? Well, they're still going with it, so it doesn't feel like it was that. Was it that they wanted to move a lot of vaccines? Well, it looks like they want to move more vaccines. So it really looks like they either, like we've already said, they really need to get rid of the evidence of how these things will work by getting everybody vaccinated, or this is the ticket for the social credit system and for having us all mandatory apps on our phone, tying us to our health records. So if that is what they're pushing for,
I'll say this. And I think this is a big, big part of what's going on with the United States of America, in the stage that we are in now, which is a collapsing empire. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to look at it. You know, this is, I had a whole bit about this on my hour special, Libertas. Check it out. It's up on YouTube if you want to watch it. But a whole bit about this where you're like, you know, it, whatever, I'm not going to do the whole bit, but it's like, okay, like we really are a collapsing empire. That's where we're at right now. If you look at a country completely expanded militarily, spending itself into debt, cultural decadence everywhere, you know, like everything falling apart. This is it. The currency being destroyed, you know, like all the signs are there. And one of the things that is, like with all these things that we're saying, right, like all these things we just laid out, there's a frightening aspect to it, and there's a silver lining in there somewhere, right? So the frightening aspect is like, yeah, we got the war in Iraq. But the silver lining is like, everyone knows now that that was completely based off lies and bullshit and never should have been done. So what's happening now is that the elite are freaking out. Like they're not behaving in the way that a group of elites who are confident in their ability to maintain power act. They're acting like, you know, a group of elites who are worried that they're going to get dragged through the streets. That's how they're acting. And so there's something dangerous and terrifying about that, but there's also something that might be kind of, you know, positive about that, that they realize this is unsustainable. I think that the ruling elite in America, and to a large degree the world, because we really are the world empire, you know, so I think that they have a much lower time preference than, or excuse me, they have a much higher time preference than previous elites. And that's not to say that they're more corrupt, but that they're more erratic. And they have, you know, as I was saying, a higher time preference. So you might see in the past where there were elites. And look, let's get real. There's always elites. There will always be elites in every system ever. Even, you know, and it's real. It's like this. I don't know. Is it irony, perhaps? Or just kind of like the dichotomy of humanity that, you know, what was the most elitist society were the communist societies, right? Like the ones that were about egalitarianism end up becoming the most like authoritarian hierarchical societies imaginable, because you can't smash hierarchy. It just can't be done. This is the big problem with the left and with left-wing thought in general, is that everything is always about like taking out a hierarchy. But what do you have to do to, you know, like what could be more powerful than the top of a hierarchy? Well, okay, if someone's up here at the top and you want to take them out, you got to be more powerful than them. And if you're more powerful, then you automatically create a new hierarchy. It's you know, you see this like even on like college campuses where there'll be this thing where it's like, well, why should the professor just dictate and then everyone else has to learn from the professor? So now the professor will be scared of his freshman student calling him a racist. Okay, but that's just a different hierarchy. Now you're ruling the hierarchy. And is that any better? Right. Usually the ones trying to destroy hierarchies create a new one, that because you'd rather at least the professor, who maybe has some competence, be in charge of the hierarchy than some fucking freshman feminist who's like, you know, you're all a bunch of racists.
And the idea of paying someone for knowledge and saying, shut the fuck up, I'm going to decide what we're doing here.
Well, it's worse because it's got all the problems of hierarchy without any of the benefits. You know, like at least with hierarchy, you'd expect one of the benefits would be the people at the top have some degree of competence. You know what I mean? And like, so if you just get rid of all of that, then it's like, fuck, you've got the worst of all worlds. But this is true over and over again, right? Like, you know, and the government falls right in the middle of this, where you go, oh, okay, this is how a lot of left-wingers think, is that they go, well, you know, you have these powerful corporations, so we need the government to regulate them. But of course, you have to create something more powerful than the power to regulate the power. It's got to be, it has to be, otherwise it wouldn't be able to regulate it. So you just created a worse hierarchy, you know? So this happens over and over again. But the issue that we have right now is that in the past, so anyway, my point is there's always elites, there's always a hierarchy, but it does seem to me that in the past they had a lower time preference. In the past, it was kind of like a confident elite wants to maintain power and then pass that power on to their children and the next generation. And so they might, you know, they're going to be corrupt. They're going to take some ill-gotten gains, but they're going to make sure they don't kill the host. You know, like, you're going to not kill the host so you can keep profiting off this thing. Whereas now it seems like it's like, look, we know the ship's going down. Get everything you can right now, and that's it, and fuck next year, you know? And that's scary, but it's also a little bit like, oh, okay, they know they can't maintain power, so maybe there's an opening there. Anyway. Okay. Let's switch gears because there's a few things I wanted to talk about today. All right, guys, let's take a quick moment. I want to thank Blue Blocks. Blue Blocks make these incredible glasses. I love them. I particularly like the blue light blocking glasses. Blue Blocks sunglasses filter just the right amount of blue light, which keeps you healthy and alert during the day. They're also great for blocking glare. Their sunglasses reduce 100% of glare, giving you the clearest vision. Unlike other brands, Blue Blocks filters 100% of UV light, which prevents damage to the cornea and reduces risk of cataracts as well. And they also just look really, really cool. Blue Blocks glasses have been seen in Vogue, GQ, Cosmopolitan magazine, so you know you're getting the most fashionable and stylish frames available. I've tried other brands of glasses that claim that they block glare and block the blue light, but I'll tell you, I've never seen anything as good as Blue Blocks, so definitely check them out. They're made in optics laboratories in Australia. This isn't mass-produced in factories in Asia. You feel it when you put them on. This is a quality product, and I think you're really going to love it, so go check them out. Their sunglasses come in non-prescription, prescription, and they have reading options. There's styles for everyone, and they have a virtual try-on app, which is really cool. Go to the website and you can really see what the frames will look like on your face. They're awesome. You're going to love them. Blue Blocks also has other amazing products such as blue light glasses, low blue light bulbs, red light therapy devices, and 100% blackout sleep masks. They're all backed by science. Blue Blocks ships worldwide in rapid time. They have easy returns and exchanges. Go to blueblocks.com/problem and use the promo code PROBLEM and you'll save 15%. That's blueblocks.com/problem, blueblox.com/problem. Use the promo code PROBLEM to save 15%. All right, let's get back into the show. And that opening went longer than I thought it was going to. So, let's start with this. Tulsi Gabbard was on Tucker Carlson the other night, and it was rough. And I feel like, as someone who's said some nice things about Tulsi Gabbard in the past and been fairly critical of her at times, but the fact that I've complimented her and kind of rooted for her at times, I just felt like I couldn't not address this because it was bad. It was real bad. You know what? Let's play a little bit of it and then we will respond.
Congresswoman, thanks so much for coming on. So you get to lie. I mean, this will not shock you because you've seen it so much, but you get to lie about the loss of human life. You get caught. And nothing happens to you? What kind of system is that?
I mean, this kind of accountability is critical. I want to point out first that anytime there are civilian casualties in war, it is tragic and terrible. Yeah. War is a terrible thing. And I think it's important for the American people to understand that Islamist jihadists are continuing to wage war against us. And the Islamist ideology, not the same as the religion of Islam, but this Islamist ideology, which is a political ideology that inspired the terrorist attacks on our country on 9/11, is the greatest threat that we're facing right now in this country and the world. It is the foundation of governance of so-called Islamic countries like Turkey and Iran and Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. And it's what's behind the discriminatory policies that they have in these countries against Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, and others. So as long as these Islamist jihadists are waging war against us, we have to work to defeat them militarily and ideologically. And militarily, we have two choices in how we do that. Number one, we can continue to invade and occupy and nation-build in countries around the world, just as we did in Afghanistan. At great cost. Number two, we can take a targeted approach using airstrikes, using our special forces to go in and go after these terrorist cells. The reality is that the cost to the American people, the cost to our troops, the cost to civilians will be far less if we take this very targeted approach to go after these jihadist terrorist cells than if we continue making the very same mistakes that we saw in Afghanistan and other parts
of
the world.
Okay, just pause it. Pause it right there. God fucking damn it, Tulsi. God fucking damn it. I mean, look, I'm not going to pull any punches on this segment. And if there are some people listening to this who, because I know we have a certain portion of our audience who are kind of like right-wingers who haven't completely given up on all this fucking idiotic shit, but I don't care. That's not what you fucking listen to my show for. So just fucking deal with this. And if this upsets you emotionally, then good. You need to hear this. Okay, Tulsi, you're the terrorist. That's what you sound like right now. You're the fucking terrorist. Fucking focusing on this ideology that has declared war on us. You were just asked about murdering a family with babies. That's what the question was about. And no one being held accountable. And your answer is how evil their ideology is. That they're this Islamist ideology, which isn't fucking, you know, it's not really Islam, but it is this political ideology, which she broadly defines as Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia. Like, what? Just these entire fucking nations, some of whom hate each other's guts, some of whom are allies, you know, just all of them. That's just it. Their ideology is so evil. Is their ideology so evil that it would justify killing babies and no one being held accountable for it? Oh, yeah, because that's what you're doing right now. By the way, Tucker Carlson has her on because she's anti-war lady, and he's setting her up to just be like, yeah, this is a fucking outrage. You can't kill babies. I'm sorry, you can't kill babies, and there be no, like, you know, fucking no ramifications, no accountability, no punishment, nothing. You don't even lose your job. I don't need it. Like, what's the appropriate punishment for killing a baby? Like, think about that. What's the appropriate punishment? Because I actually don't think death is good enough. I think you got to come up with something worse than death. But you're not even fired. I don't even think anyone responsible for this drone strike got a fucking a week of their pay docked. So you hear about that and your response is, let me tell you how bad their ideology is. I mean, their ideology will allow them to kill innocent people. But we're nothing like that. But of course she says, well, no, this is the idea here is that we don't need to fight regime change wars. We just need to have these targeted strikes. Tulsi, we're talking about a targeted strike that just killed a bunch of babies. You dingbat. What the fuck is wrong with you? This is the one issue you're supposed to be good on. I don't get it. I don't get how anyone could have that much fucking cognitive dissonance that you're going to sit there and not realize you're the terrorist. You have the mentality of the terrorist right now. You're justifying why it's okay to go fucking kill innocent people because we're confronting this great evil. That's their ideology, except we actually did declare war on them. By the way, I'm not justifying them. They're evil for the same fucking reason that Tulsi Gabbard is evil right here. God damn it, dude. I gotta say, I'm done. I'm off the fucking Tulsi thing forever. If she can't even be good enough on the issue, listen, it's not like she's good on anything else. It's not like she's good on any other issue except fucking war. So fuck this. That's what you're going to say? Oh, yeah, we really just need to be smart about this. We got to just be smart and just have targeted strikes. And by targeted, I mean Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, you know, just targeted on gigantic countries that we fucking need to go to war with. That's it. Just fucking targeting. I mean, these targeted strikes are going to kill some babies, sure. But, you know, babies got to die because Islamists who have declared war on us. Who exactly has declared war on us?
I remember that's basically just rehashing Obama's argument and policy. That
she sounds like George W. Bush, dude. Like, she's fucking worse than Obama rhetorically, well, but yes, that's his policy.
The shift was, we have to be at war with these people. War is too expensive, so we're going to engage in targeted strikes. It's really tone deaf to be saying that in response to, but we just fucked up on these strikes.
Yeah.
And it's not a given that we need to be at war with these people. Also, like, we're gambling on, here's what we're doing. We're basically using robots to kill these people, target from the sky.
Yeah.
So what happens when they get good enough drone technology or good enough robot technology that without going to war with us, they can kill kids over here? Like,
yeah.
Like, we actually have the opportunity to take the moral high ground and be like, let's not do this at all. And then in 10 years from now or 20 years from now, and they've got the technology to do this shit to us, how are we going to stop them?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point to make. But yeah, when you talk about moral high ground, like how the fuck can you judge this Islamist ideology? Let's say it's everything that fucking Tulsi Gabbard claims it is, you know, which is fucking bullshit. But again, I'm not saying there's no such thing as Islamist ideology. I'm just saying that she's defining it so broadly that you could justify a war with any of these fucking countries. But how do you have any moral high ground to judge this? While you're like, as Scott Horton put it, while you're standing in a swimming pool of the blood of innocent people, judging their ideology, you literally just ducked a question about murdering innocent children with a, yeah, it's wrong, but their ideology is so bad. Well, geez, man. I wonder why they don't fucking listen to you. I mean, how do you have any, like Scott had this great rant at Freedom Fest about this, where he was saying, he's like, how could you ever be taken seriously if you were to say, like, you know, and of course there are these, it, like, egregious, you know, human rights violations in Muslim countries, like just these barbaric, you know, customs of, you know, all over the place. Like, I mean, okay, if you want to just pick one of those countries, I could give you Saudi Arabia, you know, who's our big fucking, you know, our big partner over there who we prop up. Yeah, they have, like, fucking culture police, and they'll fucking, they chop the hands off of people caught stealing, and they fucking, like, they've stoned women to death. I mean, they do all types of shit. But how could we ever, like, judge one of the, forget even judge, but, like, when you're justifying or brushing away a drone strike like this, what are you gonna do? Be like, you don't treat your people good. I mean, sure, we'll fucking murder them with a sky robot, but we'd like you to treat them good before we murder them with a sky robot. And, you know, if we do, we'll just say, yeah, whatever, that's not really the point. God damn it.
God damn,
is it painful to fucking listen to.
Creating having us versus them thinking and then working on that, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where you're going to have a them. Because everyone's just afraid of the other. That's all it is. If there's any argument for having third-party control monopoly over violence and having a police force, it's because otherwise people go, ah, they're coming for me. I better go get them first.
And the idea that she would say, and she says in that clip, that the Islamist ideology is still the number one threat that we face in the United States of America.
Is she not listening to the scientists on COVID?
Yeah, like, what planet do you live on? My fucking natural immunity-bearing friend can't go to a restaurant. Like, that people's lives have been destroyed just by the COVID regime. I could list off 100 fucking things that are bigger threats than fucking Islamists in Turkey. Are you out of your fucking mind? Saudi Arabia? Why are they a threat? They're a threat because they get my fucking taxpayer money to fucking launch a war of genocide in Yemen. They're a threat to the fucking Houthis. What the fuck are they? They're a threat to me? And the big... Yeah, please. And the biggest threat? The biggest fucking threat. I mean, ask yourself honestly. Remove yourself from this fucking bullshit, like, ideology. And listen, like, I'm speaking directly to any of the fucking right-wingers who listen to this show who are somewhat sympathetic to that message. In real life, forget ideas and abstractions. In your real life, how much has Islamists been a threat to you? What have they done? What have they fucking done to you? Oh, and by the way, if it's Al-Qaeda or it's ISIS that you're thinking of, well, they were both fucking funded and armed, in the case of Al-Qaeda, trained by the CIA. Those are facts. So, okay, but just saying, even including them, what if they, fucking cops are more of a threat to your liberty. Inflation's more of a threat to your liberty.
The debt is more of a threat to your liberty. A fucking... it's just, it's goddamn ridiculous. It's goddamn fucking ridiculous. Fucking woke college professors are more of a threat to your fucking liberty than Islamists are. And they declared war on us. And they were and like I said on the last show, and they were motivated by this Islamist ideology. That's it. That's as deep as we'll fucking look into it. This is why Ron Paul was the only real one. Because he's the only one who understood what actually motivated this whole fucking war. And if you don't want to look at that, then you're fucking done. And the thing that's so goddamn infuriating about it is that Tulsi Gabbard, here's the thing, right? You know what actually motivates this whole fucking war a lot more than the Islamist ideology does? Is what you just did. That the death of their children means next to nothing to you. That you can just brush that away. Like, that's just kind of like, oh yeah, well, we killed a whole bunch of their kids, but you know what? We got to keep doing it because fucking their ideology is all fucked up. That, like, what do you think? Just think about it on a human fucking level. If, like, okay, I know a lot of religious people. Rob, you grew up in a religious fucking background, right? A lot of people, I'm sure, listening are very religious. Someone being a different religion than you, having like the, you know, an extreme fundamentalist worldview or something like that, could it motivate you to kill some people? Okay. I'm not saying it can't. I'm not saying it can't be a contributing factor. Imagine your kids or kids of your family members or kids that you really cared about were killed and someone had the attitude that Tulsi Gabbard just had about them being murdered. You think that could motivate you to kill some people? Just ask yourself that question. Here, let's play a little bit more from her, see if she says something else awful. That's the end of the clip? All right, good.
Does the Tuck man respond?
No, he just fucking gives her the Tucker look the whole time and is fucking real confused. And like, but he clearly set her up. Like, he clearly set her up to be like, how is this possible that there's no fucking accountability for any of this? And I'm not even saying, look, I'm not saying that we should kill the people who were responsible for this drone strike. I mean, I don't know. We should just stop doing all of this. But you would think if there was any decency, right? If there was any humanity, that if you were involved in something like that, you would just have the basic human decency to quit and just go like, build schools for underprivileged kids for the rest of your life. That's all I'm asking. I'm not even asking that they get put up against a wall and executed. I'm just saying have the decency to quit, never speak in public again, wear a bag over your face for the rest of your life, and just do charity work for like the minimum, like bread and mud water or whatever you need to just survive another day. That's all I'm asking. Just go every day, get on your knees and beg Jesus Christ for forgiveness while you wear a bag on your head and maybe like, I don't know, like a bell so decent people can hear you when you're walking down the street and get out of your way because you smell like mud water. That's all I ask. Yeah, maybe. I don't know, Brian. We could workshop some ideas. We could brainstorm about this later, but that's all I'm saying. God damn it. Oh, man, did that clip fucking infuriate me. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Grove Collaborative. Grove Collaborative is an online marketplace that delivers natural home, beauty, and personal care products directly to your door. Their aim is to make living a healthy lifestyle easy and accessible for you and your family. Every product they sell is guaranteed to be healthy, effective, eco-friendly, and affordable. Shop with confidence, knowing everything you buy is good for you, your family, your home, and the planet. Grove Collaborative wants to make it as easy as possible for you to make the switch to natural products. So they carry the brands you know and love, like Mrs. Meyers, Seventh Generation, Method, Burt's Bees, as well as their best sellers, Grove-made products, like seeding tree-free paper towels, Grove laundry detergent dispensers that cuts plastic waste by 80%, and 100% recyclable plastic trash bags. All in one place
at grove.co. With your first Grove order, they'll set you up with a free 60-day VIP trial, which includes unlimited free shipping, seasonal gifts, and early access to exclusive sales. I got to tell you guys, I really love this company. I got a little kid in the house. I got another little kid on the way. And it just means a lot to me to know that the products that I'm using are healthy, that they're not, you know, with all these like chemicals and bad stuff that I don't want my kids getting. And I know a lot of you guys out there feel the same way. So check out Grove Collaborative at grove.co. Making the switch to natural products has never been easier, and for a limited time, when you go to grove.co/POTP, you'll get to choose a free gift with your first order of $30 or more, but you have to use that special code, so make sure you go to grove.co/POTP to get your exclusive order. That's grove.co/POTP. Join the over 2 million households who have trusted Grove Collaborative to make their homes happier and healthier at grove.co/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. All right. Speaking of the kind of war issue, Joe Biden spoke to the United Nations today. And every time, you know, when Joe Biden speaks, it's a thing these days. And his team has been pumping him full of drugs for a few weeks to get him ready. They've figured out how to, like, it's like training for an MMA fight. Like, they figured out how to get Joe Biden to peak. You know what I mean? Like, they know what drugs they got to give him 6 to 8 weeks out and really get him going so that he's capable of, like, 1 hour of talking without collapsing into himself like a black hole.
How long do I have to live to find out what drug it is they give him? Like, when does that story come out? Is it 25, 30 years from now?
It might be. It might be something like that.
Yeah?
But, man, if we could get that scoop early, we should all be taking... Because we might be... It might be like a limitless pill, you know what I mean?
Oh, but we just don't know about it yet?
But it just lets Joe Biden be, like, still pretty stupid.
Right.
Like, but it's like, for any one of us, it would make us, like, fucking, you know, a genius. But anyway, basically, his speech was... It was kind of interesting. But his speech was basically defending ending a war, which is really amazing. Is, you know, you go to the UN after you've ended a war and you're like, look, I know I ended a war, but I promise we're still going to be an empire. Like, that's basically the whole speech. If I could sum it up into one sentence, he goes, I know you guys are pissed I ended a war, but I promise we're still going to be the world empire. Look, we're going to give you money, and we're going to do all types of climate change, and we'll still fucking kill people. Like, we'll still bomb people. I'm totally for bombing people. We're just not going to fight the war in Afghanistan again. But, like, what do you want, $100 billion for climate nonsense? I'll give you that. Don't worry about it. So that was basically the essence of the whole speech. But anyway, we got a little cut up clip of it. So let's play some of that.
I stand here today for the first time in 20 years, the United States not at war.
Wait, am I standing?
We've turned the
page. I'm standing, right?
All right, well, let's pause it right there. First off, I was not able to verify whether or not he was in fact standing. He goes, I stand here today peeing my pants. I stand here today with the United States not at war. Fact check result on that is false. Yes, we are not at war as long as you don't count our military presence in, you know, the entire world. It's so funny, too, with the whole, like, war on terror, like, fucking attitude. Like, you know, when Tulsi Gabbard goes, they declared war on us, right? Like she just said in that clip, they declared war on us. See, that's war. You know, whatever. Them, Turkey declared war on us. I don't know. I mean, by the way, Turkey is a fucking NATO ally. So, like, they declared war on us. By the way, if we go to war with them, we have to also go to war with ourselves because we have a fucking, you know, a treaty with them. Anyway, but they war when it's against us is very like 9/11. That was war. We're at war now because of that, right? But like us fucking killing some kids in a strike over there, that's not war. What we do in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, in Yemen, in Niger, in Somalia, in fucking all these countries. Oh, no, we're not at war. We're not at war with anyone. Yes, no, we are very much at war. Joe Biden did end the war in Afghanistan. There's a whole bunch of other wars going on right now. And yes, let me tell you, if any other country was as involved in the war in Yemen as we are in the U.S.-Saudi war in Yemen, we'd consider that them being at war with us. So yes, we are at war. When a government bombs other countries, that's an act of war. Anyway, let's keep going.
All the unmatched strength, energy, and commitment, will, and resources of our nation are now fully and squarely focused on what's ahead of us, not what was behind. I know this. As we look ahead, we will lead. We will lead on all the greatest challenges of our time.
But you get my point that it's just like, we're still an empire.
Right, but that one's also funny because he just had an epic blunder, so you're going to do zero review? You're not going to, no gameplay footage. So you just droned some kids.
No, listen, it's not a blunder.
All the military supplies are behind. But as far as he's concerned, let's just move forward.
It's not even a blunder. This is just what they say. This is my favorite. I know I've said this on the show a bunch of times before, but I'll always remember. It was just one of my favorite things Obama ever said of how revealing it is when he was talking, because there was a lot of pressure on Obama that, it's hard to even remember these days now, but Obama was elected as a reaction against George W. Bush because he was the most anti-Bush guy we could come up with. In the same way, Trump was the most anti-Obama guy we could come up with. And perhaps Biden was the most anti-Trump guy. Everyone's always just reacting to the last fucking guy. But when Obama first got in there, there was this pressure on him because the left really loved Obama. And they were like, we got to prosecute the Bush administration for war crimes, because that was our whole rallying cry for a long time. And Obama gave a speech on it, and he goes, look, we tortured some folks, but now's not the time to look backward. Now's the time to look forward. And I always thought it was so funny when you're like, look, crimes were committed, but now's not the time to look backward. And you're like, well, here's the thing about prosecuting crime. You almost always have to look backward. It's really the only way to do it. Outside of some dystopian Tom Cruise movie, it's really the only way to prosecute crime is to look backward at what happened. And then, like, I used to say it's like it would be a great defense for someone on a murder trial.
Well, it's true. But I raped those women.
I raped and killed dozens of women, but I do not think now is the time to look backward.
Tomorrow. And then
you just look at the judge, he's got one tear coming down his eye. He goes, that was a beautiful speech, sir. All charges dismissed. Okay, anyway, back to Biden.
We will lead on all the greatest challenges of our time, from COVID to climate, peace and security, human dignity and human rights, but we will not go alone. We'll lead together with our allies and partners and in cooperation with all those who believe as we do, that this is within our power to meet these challenges, to build a future that lifts all of our people.
It's hard for him to use the whisper trick.
Deserves this planet.
That's all he's got.
I stand here today for the first time in 20 years, the United States.
Oh, yeah, this is the beginning. We're back. Yeah, so anyway, that was basically the speech. I thought that was a good clip of that. It was just a promise to the UN that we're still the world empire. I promise. Listen. We're not at war in Afghanistan anymore. But don't think that means that we will not squander money everywhere. You know, it's only really like one level underneath what they're saying to what they really mean. We will lead, but together, with all our allies, with all the world, as a global force. You're like, kind of sounds like a world empire. Like, no. We're just talking about, you know, homogeny and, you know, partnerships and all this, but what we say, but the whole world doing it, you know? And you're like, well, that's still sounds a lot like a world empire. You're like, no, I don't know why you're getting this all wrong. I'm talking about the world acting together out of Washington, D.C., and then dictating orders to everybody else. And you're like, still not seeing the distinction without a difference here, Uncle Joe. All right. So anyway, that was his speech there. So he's promising people. He's still, he goes, I know I stopped killing people in Afghanistan, but like, I'm still a good guy. You saw I murdered those babies on the way out. Are we cool? Are we all cool? Man, fuck Tulsi. I'm more pissed off at her than I am even at Joe Biden, because you expect Joe Biden to be Joe Biden. But you'd think Tulsi Gabbard could at least be Tulsi Gabbard. All right, let's mix it up with something a little more lighthearted. So that that girl was killed by her boyfriend. All right, this is bad too, but on a smaller scale tragedy. Anyway, this was trending on Twitter, and I don't know. It's usually not the type of thing that we touch on this show, but a few people asked me to comment on it, and it did. I don't know why it struck a nerve with me. But so Joy Reid, who is the worst, I don't know. She's a host on MSNBC, and just. She's almost like a caricature of the kind of corporate neoliberal disguised in radical racialist leftist clothes, you know, chick. And she made this comment, which I guess at this point they know what they're doing. Like, she knows this will just get a ton of Twitter buzz. And her show's ratings, I think, are very poor. So it's only when she does shit like this that she actually gets engagement. But so you know the story. I can't remember the girl's name. But anyway, this story's been blowing up about this young girl who was killed apparently by her boyfriend. It looks that way. They found her body, like they were out camping or some shit. And there's the police cam video of her. It's a horrible story. Just goddamn awful and tragic. And of course, nothing that can't be racialized, right? So here was Joy Reid. This is the comments that got her, you know, trending on Twitter or whatever. So let's play this and discuss it briefly.
But the way this story has captivated the nation has many wondering, why not the same media attention when people of color go missing? Well, the answer actually has a name, missing white woman syndrome, the term coined by the late and great Gwen Ifill to describe the media and public fascination with missing white women like Lacey Peterson or Natalie Holloway, while ignoring cases involving missing people of color. Joining me now is Derica Wilson, co-founder and CEO of the Black
Missing
Foundation.
Let's pause it for a second. So there's a few things
here. You
think
she'd have some examples.
Yeah, well, they do name a couple. But here's the thing. Man, things get – when you look at things through – you know, it's like what you were saying before. I forget exactly what you were talking about with the Islamist thing where it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you decide everything is racist – and everything is based on race, then things become a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know? It's like, oh, you can always find an example now to prove your right, you know, to prove your narrative that you're already imposing on reality. And you'll see this a lot of times, right? Like when you see these things on Twitter where they'll be like, well, here's an example of a white, you know, killer who was arrested by the cops and a black killer who was killed by the cops. See? Proof. Racism. But then there's like, well, all right, let's dig into this a little bit more. And if you actually read the story, you're like, you know, they made this whole thing about Dylann Roof, who killed a bunch of black dudes in a church. And he was arrested and taken into custody. And then they'll be like, well, here's this black guy who killed a few dudes and he gets murdered by the police. But if you actually look into the story, it's like, well, the police came to Dylann Roof, you know, and they pull their guns on him and they go, drop your weapon. And he drops the weapon and puts his hands up. So that's what they're supposed to do. Arrest the guy. They're not supposed to just fucking shoot him. No matter how bad what he did, we still have this supposed criminal justice system where, you know, there's a judge in a robe and a lawyer in a suit and some fucking juries of your peers. And, you know, and then you fucking get convicted, which he did, you know, and like, that's how it's kind of supposed to work. And then in the other case where they're like, well, why did this black guy get killed by the cops? It's like, well, because when the cops showed up, he pointed his gun at them and then they fucking lit him up. You know, like that's, so it's not just, there's other factors involved besides white and black. But if you're coming into this, like, let me find an example of white and black, then you find that. But that can really distract you from what's actually going on here. And all that's actually going
black on. Black people don't go on hikes.
Yes.
And so all the white women at home who are concerned about whether or not they'll get murdered on their hikes, it becomes an interesting story.
There's a black chick missing. Did you check the entire apartment building? She's there somewhere. I don't know what to tell you. Check the basement and the roof. Oh, we found her. Okay. No, but look, so here's the thing. What she's doing here, which is really kind of sick, because you're using this tragedy
and trying to just fit your racialist narrative.
How is this a tragedy amongst COVID? I mean, with all the COVID deaths out there, right. Are we really concerned about one chick who fell on a hike?
And this chick
and then
was
boyfriend
like,
panicked and didn't know how to handle it and ran home.
Well, it doesn't seem to be that that was the case. I think this guy fucking murdered her. But who knows? But he murdered her. You know, it's like, well, I mean, she was 20, so she was probably going to die from COVID. The question is, was she vaccinated? Because she was almost certainly facing death. But, you know, so she goes, she's like, well, you know, white women get all this attention when they go missing. And then she names it the white woman missing syndrome thing or whatever. And she gave, what were the examples she gave? The Lacey Peterson.
I don't even know that
and,
one.
And yeah, there's the one where her husband killed her. Well, you know, it was a case. But, you know, you give a couple examples. Well, here's three examples. And they were all white women and they all got national attention. But how come we don't give this attention to everyone who goes missing? Every person of color who goes missing doesn't get this much attention. And, okay, I guess one of the first things you could say is, well, Joy Reid, you have a TV show. So you could have been giving attention to this all the time, but it's only now when some white woman's getting attention for this that you want to even talk about this, because now you can use it as an angle about look how racist we are and kind of, you know, confirm your own bias that way. But I think that, you know, in the same way, you know how there'll be this like patriarchy theory where they'll go, you know, feminists will say, well, we have a society that's dominated by men. And you could look at, you know, sometimes they'll use these figures like CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, right? So how many are there? 500, I guess, right? 500 CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. And they'll whatever the numbers are, I don't, you know, but they'll be like, well, 80% of them are white men or something like that. So, you know, 80% of 500.
So that means you only have to worry about 20% of American companies.
Right. Well, there you go. But like, you know what I'm saying? So like whatever, 80%. So that's 400 of the 500 companies?
Did I'm get just that? Taking your word
Did
on
Did I get that math
here?
Right? I think so. Okay. So there'll be, and by the way, I don't know the percentage, but just for the sake of argument, they'll be like, well, 80% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are white men. So that proves, you know, whatever. And you're like, okay, but then they almost extrapolate out from there that white men have this privilege. And you're like, well, 400 white men have this privilege. It's not as if all white men are getting in on this fucking CEO fucking money. You know what I mean? And by the way, those 400 probably fucking work their ass off and are insane people who even want that fucking job. But all that aside, this is like the thing that's so stupid about racial collectivism that you start to get to this point where you're like, so you just named three famous white women who went missing and now can act as if that proves somehow that we care so much when white women go missing, but we don't care when black women or black men or Native American women or whatever it is go missing. But the truth is, the reality, if you just for one second attempt to look at this instead of through a racialist collectivist mindset and just look at it through an individualist mindset, you go, we don't care when almost everyone goes missing. It's just really random that one of these stories actually makes it into being the story. And the reason this story became such a big story, it was not primarily because she was white. It was, I think she was like a TikToker.
It's because the country's racist against bald white men, and they instantly assume that he's guilty. Well, and when they see that a bald guy's getting away with something.
Was he bald?
Yeah, he's totally bald.
Oh, there you
and
go.
He's got a hot girlfriend. So everyone's like, this doesn't add up. He's instantly guilty, and they're going after him.
I'll tell you, you have as strong a case as she has
she
right
had
now.
A million Instagram followers.
So, okay. So she was a big fucking internet person. They're a young, like, kind of attractive couple. It was a story. Okay, he's not, but whatever. but you know what I'm saying? Like, and also there was the fucking police body cam video of it, which made it more of like a sellable thing.
And so it kind of aligned up to be the perfect storm, and it just ended up taking off and becoming a thing. So to reduce this to this is proof of some racial thing, look, how about the fact that what has it got to be? 99% of white women who go missing get nowhere near this attention. So, of course, the truth is that on a national level, we couldn't treat every missing person this way. This is something that you kind of just have to, but like, I don't know if it ever should be treated this way, or maybe it always should be treated this way. I don't know. But the truth is that the way it works is that, yeah, it's just kind of random. One gets kind of picked for whatever the reasons are, and then everyone got obsessed with this, and then it kind of just took off from there. But to racialize everything, it's so poisonous. And the thing that's so poisonous about it is that it's plausible enough the way she puts it forward. Well, look, when all these white women get fucking kidnapped or killed and they're missing and no one care and everyone cares about that. And then all these people of color and no one cares. And now you're convincing someone in her small audience that like, oh, yeah, all these people fucking hate me because of the color of my skin. And you're like, that really has nothing to do with what's happening here. Just no, nothing.
This case showcases the hatred for white bald men that everyone's so obsessed about bringing justice towards this man. And it's exactly the opposite of what she's pointing out, that this is showing that people where the power really is. That's why people are so fascinated by this case. It's because
with the hairy.
Yeah. Imagine if it was some good looking black dude. They'd be like, she fucking fell on that hike.
Rob is going to be the bald Joy Reid. The bald Joy Ann Reid. As we call them. All right, let's play a little bit more of this, and we'll wrap up in a second.
And CEO of the Black and Missing Foundation, and Lynette Gray Bull, founder of Not Our Native Daughters, an organization created for the awareness of the missing.
Just pause. Try and fit on a shirt.
Can you just pause it for a second? Yeah, that is a lot to fit on a shirt. But isn't it? I don't know, man. It's just so weird. I know this is like almost like this is beneath me to even be talking about this shit. But like. You're talking about other people being racist, and like, I don't even have anything against this woman for founding like the Black and Missing organization. But leveling accusations of racism when your guest is going to be someone who's like, yeah, I found an organization to help black missing people. You go, well, we got a tip on a white missing person. You're like, no, sorry, we don't do that. You're explicitly doing what you're accusing the other side of doing. I don't get how you play this game. How you go like, well, I only care about black missing people, and I'm also outraged that you only care about white missing people. Like, just how do you do that? How do you keep a straight face while you do that? And this is why it's just a power play. You're not actually against racism. What you're considering racism, you're engaging in right now. All right, let's play.
Indigenous women and children. Thank you both for being here. You know, I bring up this point because there's a case that's so similar. A journalist friend of mine, Derica, sent me this story about a young, about some other people that are missing. There's one guy whose name is Daniel Robinson. Daniel Robinson is a young black man. He's only 24 years old, 5'8", 165, black hair, brown eyes. That's his description. His dad has hired a private investigator to find him. He's missing part of an arm. He was last seen driving away from his job site in the Buckeye, Arizona desert on June 23rd. And his case struck me because it's very similar. He's missing in the same part of the world. It's a case that it has all of that same kind of sizzle, the sort of mystery of it. This young man who just goes missing. I never heard of it until this friend of mine sent it to me.
You never heard of it. Maybe that's on you a little bit. Also, does it have the same sizzle? Does he have a million Instagram followers? Because if not, then it's not the same sizzle.
I did not follow this story whatsoever because I wasn't interested in it. Mm-hmm. I heard on radio in between segments, someone was talking about it. Local DJs cracking jokes about how guilty the guy is. And it sounds like what always made this story interesting was that there was this guy who is... I'm going to say not guilty because I'm going to come to his defense, but people, because they're racist, were assuming he was instantly guilty and they were upset about it. And that's what gave it the sizzle was that there was this dude who just refused to talk to the cops and his girlfriend's missing on the trail. That's what I'm pretty sure brought this the sizzle. And that's based off a very little understanding of this. This is not that at all.
Well, it's not only is it not that at all, the thing that's kind of funny about it is that if you want to go the fucking race angle, the other angle that's obviously right here is not the race thing, but the sex thing. That it's like, oh, yeah.
She doesn't care about women.
Well, right. When a dude is missing, I think probably we don't go as nuts as when a fucking chick is missing. And but again, I don't know that that's the case. The truth is that most missing people, there's a lot of missing people in this country all the time, and we just don't. People don't drop everything and focus on that. And maybe we should. If we lived in a fucking better world where there wasn't a fucking, you know...
I ignore every Amber Alert. I'm annoyed. Well, why do you have to... I can't do anything. Why do you have to ruin my evening?
Like, you're like, am I supposed to start looking out for a Honda Accord? And then when I see one, I gotta say, is there a one-year-old in there? Anyway.
What am I gonna start pulling over cars?
Maybe if fucking there was no government... Or at least a much smaller government than we have now, and there was none of this political mess, and we lived in this peaceful, prosperous society. And then, like, when someone fucking went missing, that'd be, like, big news. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying that the reality is that the vast, vast majority... This is like I was saying before, when you go, oh, we live in a patriarchy because 400 rich CEOs are men, and you're like, okay, fine, but you look at that, but you're also ignoring... as feminists often do, and when they do, they just squeeze it into their narrative, that it's like, oh, yeah, but the overwhelming majority of, like, homeless people, of the prison population, of people who commit suicide and drug ODs and all these things, like, they're also men. So you can't just look at the top and not look at the bottom. I mean, you gotta, if you want to, like, zoom out and get a large view of this thing, you gotta look at the whole picture. So lots of white women go missing, and it gets ignored, too. But I do think... perhaps there's some biases there. By the way, I'm not even saying the race thing doesn't play into it at all. I'm just saying it's not so clear that that's what's going on here. But I would also say that, yeah, you know, a 20-year-old girl goes missing versus a 24-year-old guy going missing. I understand why there's a little bit more like, oh my God, what's happening to this girl?
That guy still has an arm, which means he's
got
better.
One good arm.
Yeah, he can survive in the wilderness. Some dumb bitch.
Yeah.
We gotta go look for her. She's not gonna make it.
He can throw a jab and a hook. He's fine. This guy's golden. My assumption is this guy's having the best years of his life.
That's one working arm. No, he can still jerk off. He'll be fine.
But you know what it is. Like, if there's a 22-year-old, say, girl and a 22-year-old guy, the reality is one of them is more vulnerable in the world than the other one, and so I'd understand why people would, you know, it just pulls at their heartstrings a little bit more to think of the...
Unless the girl's really ugly, in which case people be like, I hope the wolves got her.
The girl's really ugly, and you go, she'll fight her way out.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
She'll be just fine.
No loss.
Anyway.
By the way, that's the other gigantic factor is how attractive the people are, which Patrice had a great joke about. Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. He had a great joke about everything. That's really what we wanted to get to with this segment. Long live Patrice O'Neill and his comedy. Go check out Elephant in the Room. One of the best comedy hours ever made. All right. Let's fucking we'll wrap on that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back soon with a brand new episode. Peace.